Newark, New Jersey. Make some noise. What's up?
Oh, my God. Golden Truth was set for tag team action, and Gold just attacked his partner from behind.
That's what's up.
Shut up!
CJ, I got so much to talk about, man. We just have so many things on the agenda. I want to first and foremost just say I hope everyone listening took care of mom on Mother's Day. And for some reason, if there are any mothers that listen to this testosterone-driven madness every Monday or Tuesday, we hope you had a wonderful Mother's Day as well. But in the spirit of said testosterone-driven mayhem, I do want to say I'm going to name May 15th, 2017, the Monday after Mother's Day, is going to be the inaugural Motherfuckers Day, dedicated to anybody who woke up next to a hungover single mom today. You're doing God's work. Thank you, and happy Motherfuckers Day to the WWPN. Good start? Are we off to a good start already?
That's a great start. I mean, I love it. You know, that's... Wow, Bello, you've done it again. That's all I can say with that one. I really don't know how else to respond to that, but that was a good one.
There we go. All right. Well, I did, like I said, have a bunch of other things to talk about, as did you. One of the other things I wanted to touch on was this theory I was talking to you about. I think I figured out why Great Balls of Fire is a pay-per-view name. And this is probably more wishful thinking than it is, you know, realistic booking, but what if this is the beginning of a super meta angle in which, like, Vince is finally losing it? And ultimately, like, Triple H and Stephanie are going to have to seize power of the company from him because he's just losing his mind. They're going to have him committed. It'll be like this whole meta crazy angle where, you know, this is how they transition to power in lieu of Vince's death, which is presumably the only other way this is happening. So... what do you think about this? And if this is the case, Hayes, what is the next crazy thing that happens that leads us down this road?
Well, I mean, first, let me say, when we were talking about this idea, and I don't remember if it was email or text, and you sent it to me, it was just like a light bulb that went off that it's like this may be happening for real. Like, I know you're booking it in kayfabe, but this may really be what's happening. Vince has just lost his shit. His name of the goddamn pay-per-view is Great Balls of Fire.
Yeah, is it like in Tennessee or something? Like, I don't even know.
I don't know. Let's take a look. Let's look it up real quick.
Because I've been trying to figure this out. There's got to be a reason, and that's why I came up with, as crazy as this idea may be.
It's Dallas, Texas.
All right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember where Jerry Lee Lewis is from. Great Balls of Fire, good movie. Dennis Quaid, but other than that, and a good song, obviously. There's no logical, I can't come up with any, I'm just trying to get from point A to point B, and I started with meta crazy storyline about Vince losing his mind.
what's the name of the movie that I'm thinking that comes to mind? Big Problem in Little Tokyo. There you go. Pay-per-view name right there. Let's go ahead and go with that one.
All right.
Let's see.
Yeah, like Boogie Nights. I'm trying to think, like just like random ass movies.
That would have to be the night that No Way Jose wins the WWE Championship.
Yeah, could see it. Like next week at What's Eating Gilbert Grape. where does it end?
Finn Balor's day off.
I like that actually. There's a future DVD. Just him fucking building shit out of Legos.
All right, man. Are you ready to get into the red zone?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
So kiss a little longer, stay close a little longer, hold tight a little longer, longer with
she is here.
All red everything.
Listen up, there's not a moment to spare. It's quite a drop from the top. All right, ladies and gentlemen. This is the world famous Wrestling World Podcast Network. You got your boy CEO Hayes here. And if you couldn't tell from the intro, it's just a two-man show today. We do have my partner in crime, a fellow member of Team Reach Around. That is the Andrew Bello in the building. What's going on, Andrew?
Not a whole lot, CJ. A pretty meh Raw, but a lot. Like I had a weekend of watching nothing but like wrestling. I just sat around and watched a bunch of indie promotion recent shows that I've been trying to catch up on, and I still haven't watched Impact, but I'm going to do that now that I'm watching Impact again because it's somewhat interesting. Ring of Honor was a thing. New Japan's got a new belt. There's a lot going on in the world of wrestling. I do want to ask you about Ring of Honor, though. But no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But I mean, that's kind of the first thing that I wanted to ask you about. This whole New Japan, the United States title thing. I get it. They're expanding in North America, which they need to do. And after listening to Strong Style Central, they talked about it a little bit and kind of got on the fact that maybe you need to keep that title on someone the American audience can kind of recognize and get behind. But me and my thing is, I feel like it's a completely different product. I feel like this belt needs to go on the Japanese star. What are your thoughts on that? What, in your perfect world, how would this New Japan Pro Wrestling, the IWGP United States title, be booked?
I like the idea of it going on a Japanese guy. Like, ideally, I'd love to see it on, like, Ishii and him just come over and just, like, be, like, an evil foreign heel. Like, he did when he won the Ring of Honor TV title, and he basically was like, I don't even know what this title means, but I have it now, and no one's taking it from me because, you know, I just crushed one of their champions with very little effort when he annihilated Roddy Strong on one of those shows, Honor Rising type shows that they had. But yeah, I'd like to see it on a Japanese guy, but I don't know. What's the gimmick here? Is this going to be exclusively defended on American soil? Is it going to be amongst, you know, American wrestlers? I don't really think I'm fully understanding the gimmick right now. I do think that they should have gone with the North American title as opposed to just American. So then you just put the belt on Kenny Omega. And now it's legit all of a sudden. Now it's got a lineage that's starting somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is that they're kind of doing what we did, or I should say WWE did, with the UK title. It's a title that's based in a country that really, if they put it on an American, it really may not mean anything. And I get it in a sense, but when you're expanding in North America, your product is so different than what most Americans are used to. I don't really want to see a title built around talent that's similar to what we already get. Like, put it on a Japanese guy, make it mean something different. I like the design of the title. I've heard some just shit thrown at it. The red strap doesn't bother me as much. It looks better than the Universal title. I love Japanese titles in general. It just looks legit to me. But I don't know. I guess I need to wait and see how this Round Robin tournament that we're going to get to name the first champion ends up shaking down. But if it ends up just being on a North American, I don't really know how I get behind that. I would like to see an American come down and say something about how much it would mean to be the first IWGP United States champion, and then have someone like Ishii just completely destroy him and take it. Or I wish Shibata was healthy, because I'd love to see it on someone like Shibata, but it just, I don't know, man. I don't know what New Japan's planning on doing with this title. You made a comment that it may end up as a never title, and
oh yeah,
I can kind of see that happening.
This is going the way of the never titles, with the three way or the six man, and then the open weight. You know, for all the credit everyone likes to give New Japan about how they book the IC title, which they do, they book it very strongly, but they book it in such a way that it's sort of unnecessary because it's so close to the other belt. You got a guy like Naito walking around with that belt, and he was just the champion not that long ago. It's like having Ambrose with the title now, except like to a much further degree, because I think Naito's way farther up the kayfabe charts in New Japan than Ambrose is here. So it's sort of like you've got the feud going on for the main title, and then these guys are like battling for third place, essentially, is kind of how it's booked. And it's almost meaningless in that way, while especially with Naito not particularly giving a fuck about it. And then you have like there's a huge drop off to that Never title. So it's it's not how I'd book it, but you know, they're New Japan. I'm not going to get too picky with them. They obviously know what they're doing for the most part. It'll be interesting to see where this falls into it. Is this above the Never title? Is this below the Never title? Is this, you know, does it ever come to Japan? You know, how does that work? So I don't know. I'm very intrigued to see how it all works out, but I'm not optimistic, I guess.
Yeah, New Japan does a good job at making most of their titles mean something, and right now I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt until I see otherwise, but they have their work to do. Bouncing off that, and just quickly here, New Japan's expansion into the United States, do you see this being successful? What do you want to see out of this expansion overall?
I guess I want to see them over here touring like regularly. Yeah, it's hard for me to imagine that they're going to be able to do that without just basically doing shows where that belt's being defended on Ring of Honor TV 95% of the time. You know, I'm just not seeing a situation where they're going to do a whole bunch of touring over here unless they absorb some company over here. Like if New Japan just comes in and buys TNA, all of a sudden they infuse it with some of their talent, get rid of some of the other people that they don't want around. And, you know, not to say that that's plausible even, but I would imagine that that's basically what they'd have to do in order to be in this market consistently and maintain all the business that they want to do over in Japan. Unless they're going to do like a WWE type schedule where they're going to do all the shows they're currently doing in Japan and then add all the shows that they want to do here in the US, which is going to kill their talent between flying back and forth and doubling their workload. I don't know, man. I mean, realistically, I'd like to see a lot of them over here. I'd love to go to a New Japan show at Hammerstein or something like that, like a strictly New Japan show. But I don't see that happening. What do you think? How do you think this all works out?
I mean, I really, as far as how I see it working out, it's just too much up in the air for me to go right now. New Japan's successful in most of what they do. It just depends on the level of which they're willing to commit to. They have to. And the thing with New Japan is they have weeks where they don't have shows at all right now. If they fill that in with sending some of their guys over here into the United States to do a couple of shows, it can be successful. I think ultimately, though, no matter how many shows they do over here, they have to have a television product that's different than what they have now. What they have now on Access has gotten better. It started off being months and months, but I think at one point it was like 6 to 8 months behind. It caught up at one point. I think now it's like 2 or 3 weeks, maybe even a whole month behind. But they have to get an actual show that's built, made for an American audience, that's a weekly show, not just a glorified recap. And I think that's where it's going to be. If they're willing to put in the money to do that, to make a weekly show out of their product, which they haven't needed to do in Japan, then they could be successful. And they also have to market it differently than it just being pro wrestling, because with the American audience, if you just have it as a pro wrestling show, that audience is going to be already leaning more towards, oh, I can just get that from WWE. They have to market it in a way that off the top, you know, it's completely different from what we're getting, whether that's vignettes, commercials, titling it something different. I made the comment once in our group chat that it should be called Pariso rather than pro wrestling or a wrestling show. Do something that lets the people know this is just a little bit different than your mom and dad's wrestling.
I fear it goes the way of Iron Chef. That's all I'll leave it there. I just fear it ends up going the way of Iron Chef.
Oh, damn, man. Damn. We're going to move on. We spent a lot of time on that. Yeah, the next bit of news that we're going to get is the World of Sport over in the UK. That show that was going to come back for a 10-episode run has been delayed until 2018. And WWE, who announced that Jim Ross is going to be announcing this, their UK weekly show now, that I think starts this Thursday, if I read that correctly. Like, that's all Friday. Of a sudden. Yeah, Friday, something. It starts this week, which I didn't expect to happen that. So I know that they did tape, but it didn't. There was been no indication that it was starting this soon up until today. So the fact that they kind of, it seems like they may have rushed the show out. Do you think this has, for all intents and purposes, buried the world of sport returning?
I think it's possible. I mean, they're going to look, ITV, if they want to put money into it, they'll do it. There's a big enough market in England for wrestling, I think, between them and, you know, World of Sport, WWE, I guess ICW and Progress are going to essentially get absorbed by WWE. So there's, you know, a void that's left, and TNA is going to do some business over there as well, with ITV and World of Sport. So I don't think it's completely out of the picture. I think maybe them taking a step back and seeing how WWE does it, it's almost a page out of Vince's book to a degree. This is something Edge and Christian and Kane were talking about on the Edge and Christian podcast this week, because Vince likes to be a little bit behind the curve so he could see how it works out, like how, you know, what fads hit and what trends, you know, end up actually, you know, having longevity. And maybe that's what ITV's doing here, is they're going to see how WWE does, and then maybe they swoop in with, you know, maybe they can get Will Ospreay, who's a big deal a year and a half from now, or whatever the case may be, or, you know, somebody along those lines to come in and be the centerpiece for them. I don't know. I it's going to be interesting and create some competition ultimately, but it looks like WWE's taking an early lead, I guess.
And that's what Vince has done over his lifetime. I mean, he's shown an ability to do that. World of Sport, which, you know, having that one taping that they did that really went over well with wrestling fans, to now have over a year between that and your weekly show starting, is definitely going to hurt that brand, with the WWE expanding in the UK during that same time. So it you know, Impact, Jeff Jarrett worked hard to get that partnership. I think that's gone away now, so World of Sport may be looking for another partner. Whatever happens there, just the talent over in UK, and that being more highlighted, and that type of wrestling being more exposed, is going to be good overall for wrestling as a whole. It just sucks for the people who were contracted to work there. What happens to that talent now? You would think that their contracts aren't going to hold out all the way into 2018. So hopefully they can get some new talent in there, because WWE is in acquisition mode completely.
Absolutely.
And so we're going to finish up this new segment on some ROH, because they put on one hell of a pay-per-view this weekend. Your thoughts on the pay-per-view, your thoughts on the fallout, what's going to happen with everything that happened in that pay-per-view, what's going to come of it?
Wow, I mean, I don't watch Ring of Honor TV on a weekly basis. I really am kept up to speed with Hour of Honor here on the network, with Gerald Cooper pretty much keeping me up on Ring of Honor on the weekly ins and outs. But I do watch the pay-per-views. I saw Super Card of Honor was the last one I watched, and now I'm watching this one. And I missed War of the Worlds Toronto, so I'll probably go back and watch that. But yeah, the New York show was great. The main event was really good. I honestly, I said it to you guys in the chat, I think that was the best ending to a triple threat I've ever seen. Spoiler alert, Christopher Daniels wins, and he wins via the best moonsault ever to Cody Rhodes, who has a figure four on Jay Lethal. Lethal is trapped, can't help out or break up the pin. Rhodes gets that. It was just so perfect. Like, I can't think of a really great, well executed ending to a triple threat match that made more sense than that one. So you know, in my opinion, maybe it's recency bias, that's one of the better endings to a triple threat I've ever seen. And Marty Scurll joining the Bullet Club, didn't see it coming. Don't necessarily love it, but Adam Cole is fucking NXT bound, so I'm all for it. What did you think about it?
I mean, it was an absolutely great show. I think that I don't really just come to mind. I don't think any match that I just dislike completely on the show. Like you said, that triple threat match, it was a great match with a great ending. Adam Cole and his farewell in ROH, he's coming to NXT. What's weird is he just signed a deal, to do an appearance, I think in like June. So does that mean that he doesn't show up in NXT Chicago in the crowd? He still may. You know, Bobby Roode showed up in the crowd. I don't think he officially signed with NXT until like 3 or 4 months later. So there's a chance that something like that may happen. But he's coming to NXT. I still think Kyle O'Reilly's coming to NXT. To those two guys being down there, I'm really excited about. But to get back to Marty Scurll joining the Bullet Club, here's my one issue with that. I like him as a heel. I like his work. I love the whole umbrella thing. every heel doesn't need to be a part of the Bullet Club. Like, I just want to kind of see him out on his own. I think he's going to be entertaining with the Bullet Club. I get it. It kind of fits in a sense. But I don't know. I feel like while he gains a lot joining that faction, we kind of also may lose some of him becoming and developing into his own character, being a part of such a large faction. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think NWO is like, it's getting to that point. It's NWO-esque. It's just, you know, that's... with them basically, here's my issue with them taking in a guy like Skrull is that, yeah, all right, I get it, you're losing Cole, but Rhodes has never really had a chance to kind of take the helm there, and I think you let Cody run it for a little while, and if you bring in anybody, you don't bring another, like, you know, alpha type person, you bring in like a big henchman. Like, if they wanted to bring in, I don't know, for fuck's sake, Raymond Rowe, or, you know, or Punishment Martinez, or somebody who can come in and just be a hoss for those three guys so they can just talk shit and this guy can level everybody, almost like Bad Luck Fale was, but hasn't really been, or Luke Gallows was back, you know, in Japan. You know, just have like a big dude to just like be the diesel of the group, and just kind of, you know, big boot motherfuckers, and let Cody Rhodes talk all his game, and let the Young Bucks tell people to suck it, and you know, that would make more sense to me. But by bringing in another alpha type, like, now do Rhodes and Skrull have some sort of animosity at some point? Like, well, when do the Young Bucks get tired of all their friends leaving them for WWE? How does this work?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at some point, I'd expect to kind of Cody Rhodes to slide in there. At first, when that IWGP United States title was unveiled, I'm like, Cody Rhodes would be the perfect person to hold that title if they're going to give it to an American. If they're just focused on giving it to an American. I don't know, man. At some point, this whole Bullet Club thing, at least they haven't had it split off into the Bullet Club white and black and the Bullet Club red and white or black.
Isn't
or whatever.
It, though? Isn't it basically like that with Ring of Honor and New Japan?
Kind of. Kind of, yes.
The Young Bucks are sort of in both, but neither, because they're also in the Elite, which is like a wolf. It's like the Wolf Pack, which is sort of like and then there's the Super Click, and it's all blurred into one just clusterfuck of t-shirts, basically. Like, how many different names can we call ourselves so we can print another t-shirt?
Speaking of, I cannot. That Marty Scurll Bullet Club shirt is a thing of beauty. Like, if for nothing else. Oh yeah, but
there's like four of them. They're amazing.
Once that hits Hot Topic, I'm there. Oh yeah. Yeah, I got to get that.
They always have like buy one get one shirt deals too. I'm going ape shit. Like, I'm getting a whole season's worth of wrestling shirts in one.
Bello, how many wrestling shirts are in your closet?
No less than 50.
Wow.
Legit. Somebody called me out on it, and I was like, oh, I only got, like, I don't know, like 30. And they're like, yeah, bullshit. And they made me count them, and it was over 50. So, yeah. I have a lot of wrestling shirts.
Hey, you all of, gimmick,
basically,
man.
All the t-shirts in my closet are wrestling shirts. Those are, like, the whole section of my closet that would just be t-shirts. It's all wrestling shirts now. Like, three
Mets. Collector's items.
They are.
All right, man. We do have to get into some Raw, unfortunately. Yeah, we do. There are a few good things. We don't have to break down the whole card, but we definitely need to. There's a few things we definitely need to touch on, and a few questions that I have that I want to present to you, just that happened in the show overall. The first thing is, I am sick and tired of the show opening with talking segments. Like, at this point now, I know that's just the format. That's what happens. It's like being mad that Law and Order opens up with the start of a murder or rape every episode. Like, it's gonna, that's just what happens.
Yeah.
But what came of it? We get this fatal five-way match announced for Extreme Rules that will name the number one contender, which I do like, because we went almost a whole month without the Universal title really being mentioned or a contender trying to be named for it at all. So the five-way match is Finn, Samoa Joe, Seth Rollins, Bray Wyatt, and Roman Reigns. The winner of this match goes on to face Brock Lesnar at Great Balls of Fire. Off the top, right now, before we get too far into it, who's winning that match?
Finn Balor.
Okay.
I'm keeping it with that. Balor, because I with this getting thrown into a Fatal 5-Way, we're not going to get a payoff to the Joe-Seth shenanigans. So they're going to continue that feud even beyond that, probably canceling each other out in that match, essentially. With Braun out of the game, you don't want to have Roman up against Brock Lesnar, Great Balls of Fire. That's minimal SummerSlam, if not WrestleMania match. So you know, you're not going to have him involved. It's not going to be Wyatt. And so Wyatt and Roman will branch off and become a feud again for some god-awful reason. And Finn Balor's the odd man out. So Finn Balor gets it. Maybe like Fame said, Fonz Balor gets his ass handed to him by the Beast, and then ultimately the Demon maybe gets his shot at him and overcomes.
I'm leaning towards that mindset too, but right now my pick to win it is Wyatt, only because Braun was penciled in for that match. He wasn't going to win. What better way to have the new resident bitch and a loser of Raw go on to win the 5-Way but lose the match against Brock, and no one's really the loser there, because we all know Bray Wyatt loses at pay-per-views.
So then what? We get a Balor-Roman feud?
Yeah, I mean, they kind of played into that. I mean, I can see them. Now they have the angle of saying Balor beat Roman his first night on Raw. Reigns beat Balor tonight, so now you get the rubber match after the Fatal 5-Way.
Yeah, I could see it. I mean, hey, look at both of those matches happened on Raw. Like, why, you know, these are not necessarily like the pay-per-view buys are a thing anymore, but come on, man, those are pay-per-view matches, and they were. Both of them were excellent matches. The match they had tonight, in what I'm calling the true main event of Raw, which is that 10 o'clock spot. That's the spot that they really give a shit about, you know, as we saw with the clusterfuck that ended the night. But this match between Roman and Balor was really good tonight. But before I get into that, this opening segment, I just don't like how just regimented this whole thing is. It's like Angle's out there. He's talking about this match. Roman comes out. 30 seconds goes by, Balor comes out. 30 seconds goes by, Joe comes out. And it's all very stupid, and it all breaks out into a brawl, typically. I did like that Balor stood tall, another thing that helps for him potentially winning all this. One other thing, though, Braun out, quote, up to six months. How quickly do you think he actually comes back? Like, what? That's the kayfabe one. That's definitely the kayfabe in that real hard.
Absolutely. I would say, if they announce 6 months, they probably got a prognosis from the doctor that he can probably return in 3.
Pro Wrestling Sheet is reporting 4 to 8 weeks.
Okay.
I'm
still sticking with 3, but at the bare minimum, then 4. So that way they can say, he came back quickly from the injury. Look how he's a freak of nature. Look how fast he healed.
Yeah, they're saying 4 to 8 weeks.
4 to 8 weeks?
Yeah. So they're saying he could be back in a month.
Oh, well, yeah. He may come back, honestly. Great Balls of Fire.
Yeah. Hey, there you go. He comes in and just kills everyone in this 5-way. I'm all for it. Exactly.
Matter of fact, okay. So Extreme Rules is, they said 3 weeks away, right?
Yes.
Raw after Extreme Rules, he's back.
All right. Hey, I'd love it. I did like that Kurt Angle basically said, like, Braun was getting this shot, and now that he's out, we got to have this match. So that was a nice touch. Kept them strong. There was a lot of really good sort of one-liners that were very telling tonight. We're going to get into a couple other ones later throughout the night that Michael Cole said, but there was just, like, these little bits of monologue that really kind of gave me a new outlook on all of what I'm watching tonight. Yeah, so that was one of them.
And as much as we talk about WWE's booking, by God, have they handled Braun Strowman well. Like, since the brand split, they've just handled him so amazingly. I mean, he's had a few weeks in there that it's like, okay, what the hell are they going to do with him? But overall, it seems like once they realized where they wanted him to go, they built to it very well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And now you got these 5 guys all more or less look like they're on the same tier just below him. So, exactly. You know, say what we, you know, at the end of the day, it all sort of looks like they've booked everybody pretty well, at least if you've been watching for just tonight.
So I want to move, because we did talk about it a little bit, and I did announce who won. So we got a match made between Finn Balor versus Roman Reigns, and what you said was the real main event of this evening. It was just a good match. Like, I use good very strongly. I don't mean, because sometimes I use good to just say it was passable. It was a very solid match. It went 14 minutes and 30 seconds. Both men look strong here, and I like the way Roman picked up the win here, and he gets some momentum going into the pay-per-view. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I'm okay with Roman winning. I'm just sort of curious as to why we got a finish. I feel like if you're building into this Extreme Rules thing, like, this match should have ended more or less how the other one ended, in just like a complete clusterfuck. You know, just guys coming out of nowhere. I thought maybe Bray would appear, and then maybe we'd get like Roman or Balor interfering in the later match when they set all this up. But yeah, again, this is a pay-per-view quality main event type match that they gave away on Raw, and they gave away a clean finish. So, you know, I take issue with that on just a fundamental wrestling fan level, I suppose. But positive fins for Balor, positive spin here for Finn. Wow. Positive spins for Balor. Anyway, you know, if you've only watched wrestling since WrestleMania, Finn Balor is better than The Undertaker to you. Because wow. This was way better of a match than The Undertaker had with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, in my opinion. You know, so having said that, there's that. And then you always have the sympathy factor. Like, now he's lost, and where does he go from there? Obviously, he looked really strong in that loss, but does he need to bring the demon to Extreme Rules? Does he go with Fonz and maybe, you know, shows everybody he doesn't need the demon? Is that, you know, something that they try to work? So, it provides for a lot of character possibilities.
Yeah, and so there's a few things that I want to spin off from in the discussion of this match. The first thing that I want to is that, do you think that Roman won this match, A, so he can look strong going into the pay-per-view? Because the last time we saw Roman, even though Braun didn't eventually run off, is that Roman lost at the pay-per-view. So did he kind of need this win to get some of that momentum back leading into the pay-per-view to look credible? Because if you would have had him lose here, or to be a non-finish of the match, that may take away from it. It's just a little devil's advocate point for me.
No, I think if you were going to have a finish to this match, Roman had to win it, like you said. I mean, he did need the boost. He needed to remind everybody that, you know, like he said, he came out tonight saying, which was a fairly decent promo as far as he goes, talking about The Undertaker and how he beat him at WrestleMania, and he put him out, and he put Braun Strowman in the hospital, and, you know, so they're reestablishing Roman Reigns as this, you know, this powerhouse, I guess. And even with one arm, he was able to beat Finn Balor tonight. So, you know, he he took that post shot like a fucking champ tonight.
Yes,
I'll give him
did.
All the credit in the world.
Yes, he did. One.
I thought he was trying to move the ring. Like, it was frightening, but good on him. And yeah, he looked good in this match. He deserved the win, and he needed it. Character wise, like you said, so it was what it was, I guess. I wish we would have gotten the fuck finish. We would have gotten like a double count out or a double disqualification, or just the two of them brawling outside the ring, whatever the case may be. But hey, Roman got the win and everybody looked good, so no complaints.
And so the next question that I have for you coming out of this match is, do you think Finn Balor is a long-term main eventer in WWE? Like, do you, looking at him, I get the entrance, I get the charisma he has, but as a total package, considering his promo ability and everything else aside, do you see them keeping him at that main event level for years to come?
Well, that was another thing I wanted to touch on. I think he was killing it on these promos tonight. Like, I think he did he came off really well, like, good to me. And this is somebody who's critical of him typically on the mic. I just think he's sort of dry, almost to the point to where it's not intimidating. It's just dry. You know, it's not that silent badassery. It's just kind of meh. But he comes off, you know, kind of cocky here tonight, and, you know, he could do things men twice his size can't do, and all this other kind of stuff that he's portraying You know, he's not your typical weakling little guy. Like he's a demon in human skin that stands at 5'9" and weighs 190 pounds or whatever the hell it is, but he'll fucking kill you because he's going to stomp on your chest until your heart stops, essentially. So, you know, there is that. And I think they're portraying him really well. I think it's something that they could continue for a long time. And they've been, if the plan was to just try and get 2 or 3 years out of him, we'd have seen this demon like fucking 20 times by now. Yeah. So I think the plan is to go long-term with it. They're really pacing it.
Absolutely, and I agree with you there. And I also think, well, let me not say I think, but I can't wait for the eventual Demon versus Nakamura match. We have to get that at some point at a pay-per-view. That's like a SummerSlam match, if not WrestleMania match, written all over it.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good possibilities. Like even the Wyatt thing, which again, I think they're abandoning, and I think that's part of this whole Fatal 5-Way. Yeah. They're going to abandon that again. They've now teased it twice, but I guess those two characters would kind of be better suited to kind of have like the Sabu Taz approach where they're just sort of, you know, they're leading down a path, but they're not quite there yet. And I don't know. That was an interesting sort of spin that happened because of the Braun injury, but you know, whatever. We're going to see how this ends up with this Fatal 5-Way. That's going to have to be like an hour long match to eat up this card, by the way. Like who else they got?
Oh yeah, be prepared. There's going to be a lot of powders and headlocks in that match. Just be ready for that.
Right.
but moving on to the next match that we got, and that is Jeff Hardy versus Sheamus. It really wasn't much in this match. The ending got kind of interesting with Cesaro trying to get involved to distract Jeff Hardy. Matt attacks Cesaro, eats a bro kick that was meant for Jeff. Jeff hits the Twist of Fate. By the way, who botched that bro kick? Why did that not go over? Why did Sheamus have to bro kick Matt Hardy twice?
I don't know. I just took it as like Matt was knocked out, and because he's a ring vet, he instinctively held on to the ropes and he needed to be kicked one more time. Maybe it was a broke kick and he could be broken finally. Because all I really wrote here, CJ, is are the Hardys broken yet? To which you obviously are going to say no. And which I'm going to say, I got nothing then. Let's fucking move on.
Exactly. And that's what I have written down in one of my red ink pens that I showed you that I wrote some stuff down in red, is that Nostalgia Hardy suck. Bring on the broken universe and get the fuck out.
Yeah. Yeah, so fuck Sheamus too, because why not?
Why not? Moving on, Sasha Banks versus Alicia Fox. So we have the 205 Live mid-card title here against Sasha Banks.
and it went over.
Yeah, Alicia Fox went over here. What the hell is happening? What in what world does Sasha Banks lose to Alicia? And that's the one question I do have from you. Like, all jokes aside, I don't really have much to say about the match because it is what it is. But considering the caliber of women's wrestling that we have now consistently on WWE TV, Alicia Fox's place in that. What do you think about that?
I think she's a pretty decent to good in-ring worker. I think she has a place if they wanted to treat her character more seriously. But I like the idea of her and Dar sort of helping one another out in that respect. And if they put Dar out there more regularly with her, I could buy the character winning matches. But that isn't necessarily what really happened all that much tonight with her. I don't know. This whole thing was just sort of cringeworthy for me as a Sasha Banks fan. I mean, as the mayor of kayfabe, I would now like to give her official welcome to Jobberville. Job into Alicia Fox. Wow. I just wrote, oh, how the mighty have fallen. Because Sasha Banks, like a 3-time women's champion or whatever the fuck, and now she's jobbing to Alicia Fox.
And that's one of the things that happened with Alexa Bliss coming up and being such a good heel, is that Sasha Banks heel turn that they're teasing seems like it's just gone now because it's not needed. Alexa Bliss is so much better as a heel than Sasha Banks, in my opinion. She's not up there as far as ring work. She's, you know, I love Alexa Bliss ring work overall, but just as a heel character, she's so much better than what we've gotten from Sasha Banks, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think they can delay the Sasha Banks turn now until Bliss is done with Bayley. So on the other end of Extreme Rules, you have them kind of build up. Maybe it's some sort of tag team situation at Great Balls of Fire for the women, and then Sasha turns on Bayley to ultimately set up, as I've been predicting for almost a year now, Sasha Banks versus Bayley at Brooklyn at SummerSlam. And that doesn't even need to be for the title, because you just give them 15 minutes and let them go out there and replicate the match that they had. And it'll be, you know, it'll be every bit as good, if not better, I'm sure, at this point. So, yeah, so you delay it until, like I said, Alexa's done with Bayley. She's now got to deal with Nia. You turn Sasha Banks heel and off you go. You got your two women's feuds heading into SummerSlam, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of Alexa Bliss, she did have a segment today, which overall the segment I liked. She did completely destroy your state in New Jersey.
No. She shit on Newark, which by all accounts here in New Jersey, we will tell you most of what she said is true.
Wow. Okay. Well, fair enough. Fair enough. But out comes Bayley to interrupt this, and they go back and forth for a little while. Bayley attacks Bliss yet again. She's just so fed up with Alexa Bliss. I love how they're doing that. Bliss gets knocked out the ring, gets a kendo stick, and if you can't tell, she attacked Bayley, but if you couldn't tell in watching this, that sets up a kendo stick match I fully expected. What we get even more than that is Kurt Angle announces later on in the show backstage with Bayley that is going to be a kendo stick on a pole match for your Vince Russo booking of the night. Your thoughts, Andrew Bello?
Bro, let me tell you something, bro. All right, no, I'm not even going to try and do that for an extended period of time. But I do like how, without me even realizing, they've built Bayley up to be ready to be extreme. Right? Like, we've been talking about this for weeks, about how, like, she's been showing a little bit more edge, attacking Alexa from behind, hitting her tonight in the interview. She's had enough with Alexa. Alexa's a fucking bully, and Bayley's done having any of this. So, you know, she's ready to be extreme, and they did it fairly organically. I didn't feel like this is them getting Bayley ready to go extreme. This just naturally kind of happened over the last month or so. It's been really good booking. Now that I know where they're going, it's all made a whole lot of sense. I didn't like it when I thought Bayley was sort of being heelish, but now that I see that she's just a pissed off babyface, it's all starting to make sense to me. But kendo stick on a pole, meh. Kendo stick match would have been just fine. I don't need to see any women's matches on any poles. This is the women's revolution. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for the match overall. I like what has been done over the last year or so with women getting more matches like this, more extreme type matches. Then we got the Hell in the Cell. We also had, what else? We had a tables match last year.
Falls Count Anywhere.
Falls Count Anywhere. Yeah, so we're getting all different types of women's matches, and I love that overall for the division. But the whole on a pole thing, I just shook my head when he said that. But we're gonna move on from that into a match that, even though I think the Finn and Roman match was a better match overall, I personally, for my taste, liked the Dean Ambrose versus Miz for the IC title match more. I think it did a lot for the characters. I liked the ending. There was a few things I liked in this match. The rebound lariat being countered into a skull crushing finale, I loved. Then Dean catching Miz trying to low blow him and then just saying fucking and kicking him in the nuts. It makes sense to these characters. There's so much character building here done between these two guys. This is one of my favorite feuds moving into Extreme Rules as far as what's been done with it so far. What were your thoughts on the match itself and also how it was booked?
Yeah, I agree 100% with everything you just said. But in addition to that, Dean Ambrose jumping off the top rope, telling Maryse, like, I'm jumping, so it's on you to move. And I thought that was perfect. It played into everybody's character involved there. And just Dean, you know, found a way around it. I did like Corey Graves calling Miz's attempt at a low blow a strong style inner thigh grab, which Corey Graves, like, he's a wordsmith. That man knows what he's doing. Also, like the whole thing in the back with the Miz being all pissed off and wanting his rematch. So he's going to get a rematch at Extreme Rules in a match where the DQ could allow the title to change hands.
Yeah,
that's the Extreme Rule. Yep. What the fuck? Seriously. Like,
why not just make it a no DQ match?
Exactly. Maybe that's where, maybe Dino will explain that with his new awesome Jack Daniels looking t-shirt. And maybe the Drifter can write a song about it as he makes an appearance during this backstage segment. And the Drifter, now one of my favorite things about Raw. How has this happened?
Because they've used it very well. He hasn't even, and for all the fuss people are making about Shinsuke not getting into the ring yet, the Drifter hasn't, at least Shinsuke's appeared in the WWE ring. Elias Sampson hasn't even been in the damn ring, and they've done so much with him just coming in and out, playing the songs, the little thing he had with Dean a couple of weeks ago. I look for it every week. It's like, okay, is the Drifter popping up here? Is he popping up here? So how much longer can they hold off the Drifter actually wrestling on our wrestling show?
Oh, I want it to go forever. Like, I hope he never wrestles. I just hope we just get this guy in the background. Eventually, like, people just think they're seeing him. Like, it's just like he's like Pepe Silvia. Like, it's just, is he really there? Does he really exist? Maybe Alicia Fox isn't crazy.
Or they can do the whole angle. You remember back in WCW where they had Hulk Hogan looking in the mirror and turned into the Ultimate Warrior, and then he turned around? Just have that with the Drifter from week to week.
Yeah. Just anybody looking into a mirror turns into the Drifter, singing their own theme song somehow. Like, it's just, it'll be very...
Oh, man.
Yeah, I hope he never wrestles. Honestly, he's not that great of a wrestler, so... This is the best we're getting until he gets in the ring, and then it's all downhill from there.
precisely. But they're using him very well so far, and you know, it's crazy to think that a wrestler, we're getting so much entertaining out of him actually not wrestling. So, you know, it is what it is. But moving on, it's the actual is what it is segment of the day. Goldust is a heel. He turned on R-Truth. I would have never expected that at all. Like, that was not even on the list of 20 things I would have guessed would have happened with these guys. What were your thoughts here?
All right, well, I liked it. I like a good out-of-nowhere element of surprise, as I was talking about last week on Next Level. It just, you know, random surprises like this that don't really matter in the grand scheme of things, cool. Throw them at me every so often. So my real question, though, is this becoming just a low card pre-show feud, or is this a push for one of them?
There's no way in hell, man,
you sure?
There's no way in hell.
Please?
I could be wrong. I could be wrong. I just don't
maybe,
see it happening.
Maybe one of them's hanging it up. And the other one's going to now have to be somewhere in the mid card, so they're going to give him a push of some kind. That's sort of what I'm thinking.
Maybe
maybe Goldust joins the Titus brand.
And that is a perfect segue, because that's the very next thing we're going to get into. Big Cass versus Titus O'Neil for tonight. He just eats a big boot. 1, 2, 3. It's over with. The interesting part of this match came in where Enzo steals Titus O'Neil's phone to take a selfie, and Cruz just lays his ass out with a jumping enziguri. This is more personality that's been shown in Apollo Crews the year he's been on the main roster.
Yeah, all I got to say is everybody in the stands, get on up and clap your hands for the Titus brand. This is just wonderful. Titus Amore doing the whole Enzo shtick, coming out, talking about a match between Enzo and Apollo. Turns out it's actually a match against with him and Big Cass. It's just, I love this segment, man. I love this segment. I love Enzo and Cass. I love Enzo and New Jersey, you know, talking, pretty much making up essentially for the beating we took from Alexa Bliss earlier on in the night. And this was a great segment. Titus O'Neil somehow also becoming one of my favorite things on Raw every week.
You know, and you know, Pimpay's two times. He's having to take a break. He's actually on vacation. I think he's still somewhere drunk. But I know he absolutely loved the segment. He did text me a little bit early and said how much he loved to see Titus highlighted and actually getting a match. But to move on from as much positive things happened in this segment, in this match, as entertaining as it was, does it worry you at all that this is the best they can come up with in zone? Like, it seems like week by week, they move further away from those tag team titles. At this point, it's like, who can we get further away from the tag team titles quicker? Big Cass and Enzo, or the club? And they're entertaining. Don't get me wrong. The entrance, all that stuff on the mic is great, but it just seems like they don't have any plans for them to even sniff that tag team titles anytime soon.
Yeah, it really hasn't been very well booked for them. I'm always constantly worried that they're going to split them up, because I'm looking at this feud and I don't want to see Apollo Crews and Titus O'Neil as a tag team. I want to see them as Apollo Crews, blue chip athlete, and Titus O'Neil, sports agent. That's sort of the dynamic I'm hoping for there. And if you're going to do that, then fine. Let's have a feud between Crews and Cass, where Enzo and Titus are talking shit to one another every week. I'm okay with that. But yeah, like you said, as far as the tag team itself goes, it's not doing them any favors. But if they're not competing as a tag team, they're not necessarily losing any traction either. So maybe that's the logic there. And yeah, like you said, with the club, there's no hope. They need a top guy to sweep me.
All day long. Team roots around. Best tag team in wrestling. But into another tag team match. That is Neville and TJP versus Austin Aries and Jack Gallagher here. This was a solid match. I think it for what the purpose it served on the show, it was absolutely fine. I'm getting kind of tired, though, of this whole dynamic of Neville using TJP as his henchman. Maybe that's just me. I know you're the king of the cruiserweight content, but I'm just ready to see Austin Aries and Neville either finish this feud, regardless of who ends up with the title, and both move on to something. We've gotten, it feels like, so many matches with the combination of these three guys over a short period of time. In a sense, it feels like the rest of the cruiserweight division has kind of been forgotten in a sense. And I watched 205 Live, and you know, you get a lot of other people there. I have a suspicion with the upcoming return of one Cedric Alexander that we may start getting a little bit different dynamic after Extreme Rules. What do you think?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. They've more or less been kind of recycling these four guys for a while now. Like, are they aware that they have other cruiserweights? Like, where's Mustafa Ali? Where's Drew Gulak? Like, Drew Gulak needs to be on Raw. Like, that gimmick is going to work if they just give it time and give it air. You know, it's just, I don't know why they keep giving us these four guys. And like, I feel like, wasn't this the match last week too? And the week before that, it feels like, I mean, how many times can we see this? And how many times do Jack Gallagher and TJ Perkins need to eat pins before we stop giving a shit about either one of them? The one thing I did take away from this match, and this will segue into one of my overlying things that I heard tonight from Cole. Michael Cole at one point said, throwing to a Backlash promo, our friends on SmackDown Live. What the fuck happened to this competition thing? Is that just not there anymore because Kurt Angle's on board and we just forgot about that? We're just icing over that with these five words, our friends on SmackDown Live. That now that's gone forever. Like, is that Michael Cole slipping up, or that's it? We're past the competition aspect of it.
Well, I would hope not, because once Survivor Series time rolls back around, they did such a good job last year's Survivor Series, really highlighting the Raw versus SmackDown aspect of that whole show and everything there. I hope we don't get away from that. But Michael Cole does what the fuck he wants to do at this point. I don't really want to read into that too much, but maybe they are going away with it. How would you feel about it if they do?
I don't know, man. it would be nice if they just gave us a reason, maybe, please. Like, just tonight, to just pretend like it never existed is a real problem for me. I mean, they did a pretty shitty job of pretending it was a thing to begin with, but at least they mentioned it every so often. And like, Daniel Bryan would take jabs at Raw and talking smack, and you know, they would do the other way around every so often. But to just move past it like it was never there is an issue. Like, that's lazy as hell to me. But having said that, a slightly more important thing that Cole said later on in the match, or later on, right before the Bray Wyatt Seth Rollins match, he says, the battle that could change the course of the new era, referring to the Fatal 5-Way, I thought to myself, wow, that's really weird of him to say it that way. And just the way that he said it and the placement that he said it. Do you think that's what's happening here? And is this maybe them saying we're going to step back from Roman? Because that's what that means, right? Like, I mean, that's the course of the new era has been Roman Reigns.
Yeah, absolutely. If that's true, if that is what that ultimately means, that we're stepping away from Roman, at least being the guy, the guy that the whole show is built around. I mean, anyone who listened to us heard Billy Ray Valentine and me, we named that podcast. It's all about Roman. If we can move away from that and actually get back to building other guys and not serving everyone up to Roman to serve that ultimate purpose, not to say that. And that's not, I'm not a Roman hater. Let me make that clear. I absolutely think that there is stock. I can see why they want to invest in the guy so much. There is something about him there. I think it's more so as a heel than a face, but it's a possibility. And when you look at the way that everyone's like, look at what Braun, like for all you want to say about Roman, that feud with Roman that Braun had really cemented him as the top face on Raw. Like, I know that's not what his character is kind of presented as, but that's what really got the crowd behind him. And Roman can do things like that when you want to build other faces. And he has great matches on pay-per-views. Like, the guy delivers when he needs to deliver. And if that's the case, more power to him, more power to whoever backstage, if it's Vince or anyone else, recognizing that. Maybe ultimately to get Roman in the position that you want him to be in, maybe you have to take a step back from him for a year or so.
Yeah. I mean, I'm of the mind it's never going to work with him as the top main guy for several million reasons, but I'm not going to get into all of that now. So, yeah, I mean, at best, they need to, you know, give him a lengthy heel run, or give him the John Cena U.S. title run. Like, give him that sort of gimmick for a little while and keep him off the main events for, you know, have the fucking restraint to do it for 5 months. You know, yeah. Just like that's three pay-per-views to them now, essentially. So, you know, that would be nice if they could just ease up a little bit. I think that's really all at the end of the day. Most of the people who have an issue with Roman at this point's issue from the get-go was just ease up a little bit. Like, just all you're rushing it, you're ramming him down our throats, quote unquote. Yeah. So maybe that is the case. And I that to me cemented my pick of Balor when I heard Cole say that. I was like, Balor, this is it. They're going with Balor. They read my article and they said, you know what? That guy, the Andrew Bello, he knows what the fuck he's talking about. So we're going with Finn Balor because he's the perfect babyface.
The thing with where was I going with this? With Roman is that you had the rumors that he was going to go into a feud with The Miz. Now with Braun going out, I don't know if that is still in the books or whatnot. But if you do put Roman against The Miz, and The Miz, who's so good at getting everyone to hate him, if you can't get Roman cheered, which I don't think they can. I want to say right now, I don't think you can put Roman against anybody and get him cheered. But if Miz can't get Roman cheers, if you can't get the crowd to side with Roman over The Miz, I think that right there is telling that, hey, we're not going to buy into him as a face. Maybe never. So just move on.
I think the people that, like myself, are never going to get on the train are just, I'm never getting on the train. Like, I don't give a fuck if he goes out there and puts on 5-star classics for the rest of his career. I'm never getting on the train. Just because. Like, I don't like, you know, all right, it's possible I could be one back, but it would take a lot at this point. And, you know, it's just something that I'm gonna make him go above and beyond to really earn it back. Whereas, you know, if they just gave it to me organically, I would have bit. I was already on the train. I liked him in The Shield. I like loved him in The Shield, as a matter of fact.
Me too.
But, you know, they ruined it to some degree. And now they're going to have to go above and beyond to make up for it, essentially, as far as I'm concerned anyway. Not that they really care.
But the thing is that it's comparable to if someone cheats on you in a relationship, earning the trust, like getting the trust initially, I can give it to you. Now, if you break it, you're going to have to work that much harder to get it back.
Yeah.
And that's what it
that's
is.
That's a really good analogy. Yeah.
So, but talking about the main event itself, Seth Rollins versus Bray Wyatt, it went no DQ because Samoa Joe got involved in the whole pairing, seeing Bray Wyatt and Samoa Joe together for a while. I looked at that, and for even the minute or whatever it was going on, I'm like, okay, this could be dangerous. And then he gives Samoa Joe the Sister Abigail, and I was like, okay, all is right in the world, because those, it's just too much if those two got together. But what did you think about the match, the ending of the match, and then also just how the show set up for Extreme Rules? Are you happy with most of the things that were set up?
Outside of the ridiculous stipulation for the women's match, I'm fairly positive about the card for Extreme Rules. This match was entertaining for a while. I'm glad, again, we didn't get a finish here. We got kind of this whole you know, clusterfuck going on at the end. With Joe, what the fuck happened to Samoa Joe, Hayes? Like, why is he letting Bray Wyatt, like, direct him and tell him what to do and, like, you know, back him down or, like, just chill and push him up against the ropes? Like, what happened to our killing machine, man? Like, what happened to, you know, to Samoan Godzilla? Like, what the fuck?
I wish I could tell. I mean, they did such a good job when he came in saying that the only person he was loyal to was Triple H, and they nailed that point home. The only reason he aligned with Kevin Owens was because of Triple H, and anyone else, he would completely and utterly destroy. He didn't give a damn. And now it's like Kevin Owens is gone. Triple H hasn't been seen on TV since he was slayed by the Kingslayer. And now Bray Wyatt is the damn character from Game of Thrones. What was it? The dog or whatever that just didn't know what the hell to do with himself. The hound. That's what I'm thinking about.
I'm not a throny.
Oh, you're not a throny. But yeah, so it's right now he's a monster who I guess doesn't have the ability to focus on himself, and without having someone to kind of direct him, he just attaches himself to whoever. I don't know.
Yeah, it's unbecoming of the Samoa Joe character. It's just, you know, I'm very meh on this whole thing. As I talk about in my newest article, which you can read on the WWPN.com. So anybody out there, go ahead and check out my new article. Be careful what you wish for. Last one got some traction, so I went ahead and tried to get another one out to the people as quickly as possible. So let me know what you guys think on Twitter. You'll get the plug at the end of the show.
But yeah, so I mean, that was Raw tonight, and we're not doing ratings anymore. For anyone who didn't hear the last podcast, we're replacing our rating segments with closing thoughts. Before we get into that, just as a personal note, and I mentioned him earlier, that is Billy Ray Valentine. Andrew, me and you, probably out of anyone else on the WWP, and have really built a relationship with Billy Ray Valentine. And I want to say from the bottom of my heart, I hate you, because he took that picture with Naito that I immediately texted him. I'm like, jealous does not even begin to describe what I'm feeling right now. What did you think when seeing our good friend in a picture with the IWGP Intercontinental Champion?
Yeah, I was out to dinner with my kid, I think. I don't even know what was going on at the time, but all of a sudden I look down, I got this picture of Naito and Billy Ray. Yeah, he's got the title, they're doing the eye thing. Wow. I'm marked out for a picture, folks. I don't know. I'm easily pleased. but it was, yeah, it's pretty cool, man. That was awesome. I hope Billy Ray had a good time at the show. It was again, a hell of a show. So I can't imagine he didn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And shouts out to Billy Ray Valentine. All jokes aside,
as always.
Yeah, that guy's awesome. But, right now, it's fuck Billy Ray Valentine on the WWPN. That's what the theme of this week is fuck Billy Ray Valentine week, because that bastard got to take a picture with one of my favorite wrestlers, and I hate you for it. I love you and hate you at the same time.
There you go. What do you got for closing statements? I'm throwing the ball to you first.
All right, so for my closing statement for tonight, and this necessarily, I'm looking at this as like a closing of a lawyer closing out his argument. It's not necessarily having anything to do with Raw. This is about wrestling as a whole. Over the course of the weekend, you may have seen one Randy Orton send out a tweet that almost sent the whole IWC in an uproar. And to that, I want to say this, Randy Orton, if you only put as much creativity and effort into your matches as you go into trolling your fans on Twitter, maybe you would be a better overall wrestler. And I get it. You're protected. You want to mention how you made $5 million. That's all fine and dandy. I'm glad that your pockets are very well stuffed. But at the same time, as someone who was a huge Randy Orton fan at the beginning of your career, you have failed me as a fan in the way that you've conducted yourself and your business. So for that, I want to tell you, screw you. Stay off Twitter. Don't worry about what other wrestlers are doing. Put that time in your own craft. Everybody would be all the better for it. Bello, I'm kicking it over to you. What are your closing statements for tonight?
All right. Well, my closing statement is also on that same topic, but I will also mention, since I did want to just say something about it, CM Punk is on some sort of MTV reality game show, which is just really weird. I'm going to be DVRing it. I might do coverage of it just because it's going to be so bizarre. But yeah, my thoughts are very much in line with yours. I wrote here, fuck Randy Orton. That's what I got. You know, for a guy whose dad got him in the door, he's talking a lot of game about a lot of guys that had to earn it. And these guys take a lot of bumps and they do a lot of dives. And I saw where this all sort of started was, I guess, Rip Rogers of OVW made the original statement of this is every indie match now and wrote like a paragraph describing, yeah, not going to lie, essentially every indie match now. It's not like an inaccurate painting of it. But I think it is just, it was sort of vague, and you could pretty much generalize any wrestling match, you know, in similar terms if you decided to do so. I could say that any indie match incorporates a whole slew of different styles of professional wrestling technique in a way that tries to target each of your emotions over the course of a 15-minute match. You know, like there's a lot of really great things about indie wrestling, PWG in particular, which is probably the worst nightmare of people who are critics of the indie wrestling. You know, I love that kind of stuff. So for Randy Orton to, you know, again, somebody who walked right into WWE, I mean, yeah, he did the OVW thing, but that was just basically NXT at the time. You know, just to come in and be handed the Legend Killer gimmick and to rub a 13-time championship reign in everybody's face when, you know, we all know that's kayfabe, man. It's not like he won 13 championships. He beat 13 legends to win this title. You know, he's Bob Orton's son, and he won 13 titles because he was in a couple factions and, you know, all the other crap that they tried to push him on. So fuck Randy Orton. That's more or less my thoughts on the whole thing. And, you know, for somebody who admittedly is lazy and doesn't want to take chances, for him to be, you know, talking down to these guys that work their ass off and risk their body's severe harm, if not paralysis, taking awful waffles in fucking VFW halls, you know, I think that's some bullshit. So with that, I'll end with dive.
So that has been the Red Zone for tonight, people. If there's nothing else, Bello, go ahead and tell the people where they can find you.
Well, they can find me on Twitter at WWPNBello, but I did have a quick Reddit comment as well. For those of you unaware, the Glow Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling show is coming up on Netflix. The boys of Reddit were talking about it on Squared Circle. And so user Phenom states, how to get your lady into wrestling. Get her into Glow, have her watch Sasha versus Bayley, then watch the women's tournament, profit. Which I thought was great in and of itself. But then somebody says, well, it seems like a bit of a stretch when you could just show her Shawn Michaels. And somebody responds, well, he is just a sexy boy. And somebody replies to that, but he is not your boy toy. And with that, your Reddit comments of the week. Again, I'm on Twitter at WWPNBello. And go to the WWPN.com. And like I said, check out my article. And Next Level Wrestling Podcast, this Thursday, we'll be doing TakeOver preview.
Yeah, absolutely. Go to the WWPN.com. That is the certified G-spot, as we like to call it, for the Wrestling World Podcast Network. I am CEO Hayes. You can follow me on Twitter at CEOHAIZE. Always check us out. We have shows releasing basically daily, reviewing and covering, God, at this point, it's almost every promotion, which we may have something else in the works as well. A little side project with me and Bello. So be on the lookout for that. We're definitely hammering that out. I do want to announce, and I want to say it here. I will be taking a little time off from the Wrestling World Podcast Network starting in June because of a relocation to a new city and state, but I will not be gone. I won't be completely off the airs either. I may do something pre-record. I'm going through some ideas. I don't want to be completely off air for a month, so we'll work out the details there. But in the meantime, Andrew Bello is going to be stepping up. Gerald L. Cooper from the Hour of Honor is also offered to step in and cover a couple of my other podcasts that I do. So the podcast itself, it's gonna, your feeds aren't gonna miss a step. You're not gonna miss a podcast. It's gonna be a few different voices, which is good. You get a little more exposure from our other host. But I will be taking a little brief time off. I will be back, and believe me, I'm gonna go out with a bang, because I have something special planned for the WWP and 1 year anniversary. So be on the lookout for that. Other than that, I am CEO Hayes for Andrew Bello. This has been the Red Zone. Catch you next Monday. We're out.
Peace.
Peace. Did you do anything special for your mother yesterday?
I do the typical flowers. Like, my mom is always giving me the, like, don't spend your money. So as long as, like, I get her the flowers, it's, she knows I'm not breaking the bank. And at the same time, it's like the nice gesture. It works out for all of us, because, you know, God forbid I should ever go nuts. All I'll do is hear about this money that I don't have that I'm spending. So, yeah, so nothing crazy. And then brunch with the family. How about you, man? How was Mother's Day for you and Mrs. Hayes?
Oh, man, this whole entire weekend was just a clusterfuck. So my dad came in from California Wednesday, saw him Thursday and Friday. We went out there to hang out with him and my mom. And then, Friday we went to a baseball game, Cardinals versus Cubs. Because my dad's from Chicago and we're in St. Louis, so it's a big rivalry game.
Yeah.
Saturday was my sister's college graduation. That was at 10 a.m. We had a family barbecue afterwards that I had to cook for, me and my dad. And then, yeah, Sunday we had Mother's Day, which we cooked for my mom. Of course, for the wife, we kids took her out for breakfast, just her. Got her a gift. Just the normal stuff. And then the in-laws. Nice. It was... This whole weekend, seriously, I probably got about 9 hours of sleep between Friday to Sunday night. It's ridiculous, man.
All right, well, we'll try and wrap this up early then so we can get you your beauty rest.
I'm not fame. I don't need beauty rest, but...
soul to keep. No, I ain't looking for